Welcome to Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, a podcast brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. TIPQC exists to improve health outcomes for mothers and infants in Tennessee through our quality collaborative that will identify opportunities to optimize maternal and infant outcomes across our state and is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. The Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast is designed for medical professionals and for patients and families across the state. We will focus on all aspects of the perinatal period with special attention to reducing our maternal mortality rate. This podcast is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health.
Welcome to the Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee podcast, brought to you by the Tennessee Initiative for Perinatal Quality Care. I'm Scott Guthrie, a neonatologist, the state project leader for the Tennessee's Tiniest Babies Project, and the past infant medical director of TIPQC. One of the things I like so much about these podcasts are the interesting people we get to have conversations with about topics that can help improve care for mothers and babies, not only in Tennessee, but anywhere else this podcast is being listened to. Today's podcast is focused a bit more on helping healthcare providers, but I can guarantee that anyone listening can learn from our guest today. And speaking of that guest, let me introduce him to you. Dr. Tarif Bakhdash is joining me today. Dr. Bakhdash is a pediatric neurologist. Now, notice I said neurologist and not neonatologist. I think this is the first time I've ever had a chance to sit down on this podcast and talk to a neurologist. He's also the chief of the Division of Child Neurology at the University of Kentucky in Lexington. He has taught and served around the world and has received the Standing Ovation Award from the Children's Hospital of Wisconsin for his humanity in treating children in 2015. He has also had the most fascinating career that I'm going to get him to talk more about in just a few minutes. Now, I met Tarif just a few weeks ago at a conference where he and I were both speaking at in Amman, Jordan. Tarif and I immediately hit it off, and over a wonderful breakfast of falafel and hummus one morning, he told me about the 12 skills for a better life that he has developed to help his physician colleagues. Now, when I heard this, I knew immediately this was something TIPQC needed to share with our listeners, especially those that are healthcare professionals. I think these principles can help us immensely as we navigate our careers, work in a stressful environment, and balance our professional and personal lives. Because this is going to be a lengthy conversation, there's going to be two episodes so we can explore and learn from Tarif's experience. So Tarif, I want to welcome you to our show today. You want to say hello real quick to all of our listeners?
Yeah, thank you, Scott. It's amazing to see you back again so short notice. I mean, after Jordan, I'm very excited to be here. I'm honored to be here. It's a privilege, actually, to be with all of you. Thank you so much, Scott. Thank you.
Well, I'm excited you're here today, too. And I want you to just share with our audience about your career and the journey you've been on. Tell us a little bit more about yourself.
So I was born actually in Damascus a long time ago when dinosaurs were still alive. And then I lived actually in Amman, Jordan for a while, Beirut, Lebanon, then Tangier in Morocco. And then we moved to the United States in 1985 as immigrants. My uncle was in Minnesota and he applied for me to come to the U.S. when I was 14. And then I actually trained in peds in Michigan, ped neurology at Texas, Children's Hospital at Baylor. Did the first year of epilepsy at Cleveland Clinic, the second year at Harvard, Boston Children's. Then I did sleep, actually, at Harvard. Then did a movement disorders fellowship in Rush in Chicago. And then I took my first job at Case Western for 4 years. After that, I got an epiphany that says, thou shalt leave overseas. And I packed and I left, actually, for 8 years. Lived in the Middle East, worked with the United Nations, nonprofit organizations, became the first Secretary General for the Disabled, and we created a full plan for the disabled, actually, people with disabilities in Syria. And then came back to the U.S. in 2010 and did different things from being the only child neurologist in the state of Montana to leading different programs and finally ended taking this job as the chair of child neurology in the U.K. In Lexington, and I love it. People are fantastic. Go Cats!
Fantastic. In doing our research, because as part of like running a podcast, you got to do your research on the people you're talking to. I found that you had written a book about growing up in Damascus, growing up in Syria, about your experience. Just tell us just a little bit about this book and about your experience growing up in Damascus.
So I grew up under Ashley Assad's father, the current president of Syria, his father. I grew up as a child in that kind of situation, and it was a full dictatorship. I lost actually a few of my friends. They were only like 10, 12, 13 years old. Some of my relatives also. We don't know where they are even at this point. And so when we came to the U.S. in 1985, I thought over the years, like, I need to document from the people's point of view, what they went through for the last 50 years in Syria and all the struggles. And I didn't want it to be politically, historically only oriented, but to be from the people's point of view. My mother only also, unfortunately, in 1972, while living in Lebanon, she got a letter bomb that made her lose her eye and her face and her hand. And she was actually a bystander. She was not even supposed to get it. It was a letter between, I think, the Israelis to the Palestinian leadership at that time. And by mistake, she opened it. And so that led to many injuries in her. And she still actually suffers. But thank God she survived. She stays with me right now in Lexington. And so I thought I need to write about all these experiences and share with people. Now, I was lucky because the cartoons were drawn by a very famous, actually, person named Ali Firzad. And he got actually international awards. The government broke his fingers and he had to flee actually to Kuwait. And the book has been taught for a few years at Missouri State University, and I was honored that it was taught there. But the book is basically, again, about the people's experiences. And then I ended the book by talking about my experience with refugees when I went in 2015 and later to Al-Zaatari camp and Al-Azraq in Jordan and what we saw. And I was lucky also to have a Pulitzer journalist join me to these camps and wrote beautiful front page articles in Wisconsin about the trip and what he saw and the experiences he went through.
Man, that's amazing. And I know just sitting down and talking with you over our breakfast, you talked about these experiences, how these experiences have really shaped who you are, and most importantly, helped you come up with these 12 skills for a better life. So I want to delve into this right now. Just list these for everybody that's listening. What are these 12 skills, these things I need to master to have a better life?
So over the last 10 years, Scott, I was asking myself the following question. How can we all as human beings live a better life, whatever we're living, whatever we're doing? And I accumulated over the 10 years key topics from so many resources and courses and top universities. And topics will include, for example, time management. It will include how do we think clearly, critical thinking, how do we avoid thinking biases, topics such as how can I change myself to be a better person, topics of how can I be a moral person in this 21st century period, and different topics that we'll cover together, actually. I'm going to start actually by giving a summary of why we behave the way we behave from everything I've learned in the last 10 years. I'm going to summarize in CCMEP. So C and another C and an M, E, and P. And the first C is about culture. So the way we behave is affected by the culture we're born and raised into. The second C is context. The way you behave when you're at work is different when you behave with your family or in Jordan, for example, or whatever you are. The M is for the mindset. Mindset is crucial for happiness. And we're going to talk about actually happiness 101. Happiness is crucially affected by our mindset, the way we approach life problems, the way we deal with issues. And then E will stand for emotions. We are human beings, and I'm going to talk also about how to manage our emotions and feelings. We all have feelings, but how we actually control and modify our behavior, response to our emotions is crucial. The P is about passions and purposes, and we'll talk about that also. Finally, I want everyone listening to imagine that every human being we meet is driving a huge truck. We're sitting in that truck, and that truck has all our past experiences, where we were born, where we were raised, all the experiences we went through, all the difficulties we had to go through, all the successes we had to go through. All of that is sitting in that truck, and we're driving that truck day in, day out, and that truck gets bigger and bigger as you get older. The key point is all of these things I mentioned have no 100% power over us. We can change ourselves. We can modify our lives. But we have to remember it's a mindset and it takes work. It takes effort.
So what's the first one?
Time.
What can
Yeah, people talk about, you know, time management. So people are going to think now, I want to talk about how do you control your time and the best way to actually do better work. Actually, it's not that. Time management to me is how can I pay attention to every moment in my life? How can I focus on every moment in my life to live life? Not to do a better job as much as to live life. We are living in a society that has something called pseudo-productivity. And the pseudo-productivity I learned from a book called Slow Productivity. It's a beautiful book I'm listening to still. And the book talks about how we have to slow down. We need to slow down. We are bombarded by so many things, by social media, by running here and rushing there. We are not living in the moment anymore. We are thinking about the past or the future. But what about now? Can we listen, for example, attentively? We hear each other nowadays, but we don't listen to each other. I don't want people to use their ears, you know, just the hearing process, but the listening process. We need to listen not with our ears, but to listen with our hearts. If we get to listen with our hearts, that's the purpose of life, actually. How can we help each other? And you've done amazing when you were in Jordan, for example. What would make you go down all the way there every year just to help people you never met before? Well, that's it. Listening with our hearts. Can we be empathic? Can we help each other? Whatever we are, whatever religion we believe in, we are human. The bottom line, we're human. And Gandhi said it. If you take your religion away, your ethnicity away, where you come from and away, and take that truck away, what's left is your humanity.
Yeah, so beautiful. So first up, we got to pay attention. We got to slow down. That'll help us manage our time better. And then the next one, I think that you mentioned, was how do we think clearly through problems that we're dealing with? How do we avoid cognitive errors? Why is that important for like a healthcare worker to do this? And how can this help me do a better job?
Exactly. If you look actually at the economic forums, most of them, by the way, Scott, over the years have asked for two main things they look in their employees for. They look for critical thinking and communication skills. Now, part of thinking clearly is critical thinking. But to think clearly, we need to avoid all the cognitive biases that we have in our minds. And these are subconscious processes. So unless we're actually kind of attentive to them, we may miss them. I'll give you an example. There's something called conformity bias. And conformity bias, where we all follow the crowd kind of thing. If the majority is doing something, we don't want to stand out. We want to follow everybody and let's go and do it. World War I. World War II, most of the wars in history of humanity actually has been because of conformity bias. People don't stand up and say, wait a second, there's something wrong here. The second bias is actually called confirmation bias. When we actually look for evidence to confirm what we believe in, whether it's political, religious, whatever it is. Just to give an example, I don't see anymore. Why do we have to be so polarized in our nation? Why can't we focus that we're all the United American fellows? We are American fellows. We're not Democrats. We're not Republicans. We need to unite again. We need to accept our differences, but go back to the basic concepts. I love every American citizen. I don't care what they believe in, if they believe in Democrats or Republicans. That's not my point. These are biases that are really important that to be careful about. And the more we're careful about, the more we're going to be able to think more clearly.
Right. And then changing myself to make myself better is next on your list. Now, come on, Tarif, why do I need to change myself for?
Wonderful. I wouldn't change anything about it. Actually, I'll clone you if possible.
No, there's a lot of changes I need to make. But tell me why this is important to go through this periodically and search yourself and realize I've got some stuff I need to change.
We all have to improve ourselves. So the concept of changing ourselves to always improve ourselves, and not only improve ourselves, but improve everyone that come in our way. So Dr. Milkman, for example, she has this beautiful book called How to Change. She trained at Harvard, and she's now at Wharton School of Business. And she wrote this book that I read the whole book. And basically, she's talking about how we all need to improve continuously who we are. And there's science behind it. So she will tell us how to work on our impulsivities, how to work on our procrastinations, how to work on our forgetfulness. These are human factors. We all have these things. But to improve ourselves, to improve our lives and those around us, we need to be cognizant. We have to pay attention again where we are, where we want to go. And that we'll talk about later, which is purpose and passion. I think that's next on our list.
Yeah, exactly.
So purpose and passion and talents. There's another great book actually called Hidden Talents by, I think, Adam's last name. And he's a great, again, professor. Got a lot of awards from Wharton School. So you can see I'm using always highly, you know, important resources and all built on research, by the way. In his book, he talks about how do you find your talent? And that's actually the course I started teaching here at the Neuroscience Center to the students, because I thought that's the first thing we should start. Where is the talent? We all have talents, by the way. But the question is, how can I find my talent? And after you find your talent, and the educational system does not allow us, unfortunately, to find our talents, which we have to work on that over time, then we go to something called passions and purposes. Well, what is a passion? What's a purpose? To me, a passion is something you feel so strongly about. It motivates you. You want to do it. You wake up in the morning, it's in your head. You sleep at night, it's in your head. That's a passion. Now, when I take that passion and I use it to serve others, to help others, it becomes a purpose. So what you're doing, for example, with your trips to Jordan, that's a passion. Now, the fact you turn it into a purpose by helping others, that's where it becomes a purpose. Your podcast, I was really fascinated by the idea. It's just wonderful that you're doing that. And that's a passion that turned into a purpose. Everybody should ask themselves a few questions. For example, what would I do for hours in and out and I still feel happy and energetic? That will lead you a little bit to where is your passion. And actually, there's a set of questions that I ask people that I learned from a course that I took at the University of Michigan by an amazing professor who lost his daughter, 19 years of age, in the heart transplant. And she got the first one, but couldn't get the second one. And she died, and he lost purpose. And he searched for how can I find a purpose in my life? And he found so much information that we can have an amazing life, actually, if we have purposes in our lives. We can have better health, better, for example, no sugar level, less chances of Alzheimer's, less chance of stroke, if we have purposes in our lives.
Let's think about this from a healthcare professional standpoint, because I think most people go into medicine with like, okay, my purpose is just like serve others. I mean, you got some type of grand scheme in your head while you're doing this. But as I've traveled this road for a few years now, it's important for us to have purposes outside of medicine too, isn't it? To have something that gets us up in the morning. How do we go about doing that?
That's absolutely correct. I mean, you definitely had an important point. Purposes in life has not only to be related to work, but actually to our life in general. People should have purposes related to work, but also to life. We have families. We have loved ones. You have, for example, the church or the synagogue or the mosque you go to or whatever you follow, whatever you believe in, that's a purpose. And you have to take care not only of work, take care of you outside work. I was actually a meeting earlier with my team in child neurology here in UK, and I asked everybody the following two questions when they come to meet with me. Number one, how can I help you have life more than work in balance? We need to move away from even work-life balance. I believe it has to be life more than work and should be in balance. It should be more towards life than work. Because studies have shown also, if you're satisfied, if you're happy with your life, you're going to have a better job. If you're happy at your job, you'll be better with your life. So it has to be balanced on both sides. And the second question I asked the team is, how can I help you to enjoy time? That takes effort. And we need to work on that, actually. And again, by building on the seven questions that we asked, like we asked a question like, for example, what wakes you up in the morning besides the alarm, of course? Right? Mm-hmm. The second question, who inspires you? The third question, who relies on you? The fourth question, what causes do you want to defend? What causes do you care So, Scott, let's move to another important topic, which is talents and purposes. How do we find our talents and purposes? Everybody has talents. The problem is our educational system does not allow us at times to find our talent. And that's what we need to figure out. How do you find our talent? There's a great book actually called Hidden Talents by a great author from Wharton School. And he is fascinating, got a lot of awards for teaching. And he talks about it. And the title's called Hidden Talents. So I want people to really start thinking about how do I find my talent. The second component, after I find my talents, I go to find my purposes and find my passion. What's the difference between passion and purpose? Well, passion actually is about what motivates you. What gets you in the morning to think about, and what do you think about when you go to bed? What do you like to do? What do you enjoy doing? That's a passion. When you take your passion and use it to serve others, to help others, it becomes a purpose. Exactly along what you're doing in Jordan. You have the passion to travel maybe and see the world. But you took that, said, let me help others. That became a purpose. And we do actually have people go through seven questions. And these seven questions I learned from a professor who gave a course at the University of Michigan about purpose. He lost, unfortunately, his daughter. She was 19 years old. When she died, she got the first heart transplant, couldn't get to the second one. And he lost purpose. And he started asking, how can I find my purpose in life? And that's what he did. And he came up with this course and found evidence. If you find your purpose in life, actually, you have far better health. You'll have better, for example, A1C, which is, you know, glucose, as you, people may not know about, they're not physicians. Then you have less Alzheimer's, less stroke. You'll have better income even. So having a purpose in our lives is so crucial and important.
Love it. And so hopefully that's going to encourage everybody to find a passion outside of medicine, outside of your job, because you'll have a much, much better life satisfaction. Tarif, next one on your list is managing emotions. Now, why is this important to having a better life?
Because if you think about it, we are actually just emotions walking on two sticks. People think that we are rational creatures. We are actually almost always filled and packed with emotions. We have emotions coming in and coming out throughout the whole day. Even when we're dreaming, actually, we have passions and emotions and feelings, if you think about it. So emotions are crucial for us as human beings. Now, to manage our emotions, we have to first learn what are the emotions we're going through. And we will learn, hopefully, if we do the course. And there's a book, actually, about that also called Permission to Feel. It's really a wonderful book, also from a professor at Yale University. And he'll teach us how to manage our emotions by learning first what are our emotions and how can we manage our emotions. Because we all have feelings. But the question is, how do I manage my feelings? How do I deal with my emotions and feelings? That's what's crucial. And actually, if we learn how to deal with our emotions and feelings, we can have far better life, not only for us, but for people around us.
Wonderful. So as we wrap up this first group of six skills that I need to develop a better life, I found this one really interesting, and my wife is really going to be upset with you that you've got this one included in there, but it's, I need to learn how to argue. Why do I need to learn how to argue, Tarif?
Well, because, Scott, if you think about it, we always have something that we have to discuss with other people, talk to other people about. So the way I see it, again, like we talked about time management, how it's not the usual understanding of time management. This is different. This is actually about, do you want to be right or you want to be happy? As the psychologist Rosenberg asked the question once. The point is, we want to be happy. People unfortunately take argument in a negative way. What we're going to learn is not how to use a negative way, but to use it in order to get to benefit everyone involved. My purpose when I argue is not to defeat the other side, not to win over the other side. My purpose in arguing is to get to the middle point where we can work together. Sometimes I'll get to the 40%, you get the 60%. I may get to 20 sometimes, you get to the 80, which is fine. The purpose is to bring our cohesiveness. We can work together as human beings. And that's actually the purpose of learning about how do you argue. There's a point we're going to mention, actually, the 12 points is crucial conversations. Part of it, actually, is to understand why people argue, why people become negative, why people can become angry or disconnect when they argue. because they forget how we do these crucial conversations. Actually, we'll learn it. It's really a whole process. And there's a book called Crucial Conversations, which is a fantastic book that I advise people also to look at. But we will learn together, how do we do this? How do we take the story that you told me, and I made it into a negative story? I responded to your argument in a negative way. You took it, you made it negative, and then we stop talking or we get angry at each other. We forget what's called shared value. What is our shared value when we're arguing? That's where our nation needs to go back to the shared value. Forget that someone is Democrat and someone is Republican and someone is liberal, someone is conservative. I don't care about that. What I care about our shared value as a nation. We are a nation. We have to love each other. We care about each other. We have to support each other. We have to build a future for our children. That's our shared value. And when you focus on the shared value, all the arguments become far better, and we end up winning for all the parties involved.
Absolutely love it. So just to summarize where we're at now, we've gone through the first six of your 12 skills for a better life: time management, how to think clearly and avoid cognitive errors, how to change yourself to be better, finding your purpose and talents, managing your emotions, and how to argue. And you've also shared some wonderful resources with our audience that they can investigate, read these resources, watch these resources. I know we'll be sharing some of these in our show notes as well. So if you're listening to this today, you can turn over into the show notes, get some of this information. And unfortunately, we're going to have to stop this episode at this moment right now, but you'll be back next week on our next episode to finish out these top 12 things that I need to develop to have a better life. So, Tarif, I want to thank you for joining us today, and we're going to take a break right here and pick this discussion up next week.
Thank you so much, Scott. It's wonderful being with you on. Everybody listening to us, I thank you for giving me the time, the attention, and your kindness to listen to me.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee, presented by TIPQC. TIPQC is funded under a grant contract with the state of Tennessee. Healthy Mom, Healthy Baby Tennessee is brought to you through a cooperative agreement with the Alliance for Innovation on Maternal Health. Do you have ideas for a future guest or topic, or even have a question you would like answered on upcoming episodes? Visit www.tipqc.org, that's TIPQC.org, and click on podcast to submit suggestions and questions to our podcast team. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast to be the first to know when new episodes are available, and find us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube to stay in the loop with our active projects and other relevant news relating to perinatal health in Tennessee.